And welcome and thank you for that introduction. Today, as the title of this sermon suggests, I'm going to be talking to you about plastic pollution, the persistence of ideas, and again, the impacts that we leave behind. So to start off, I realize that for most of you, I'm probably one of the youngest folks you've ever heard give a sermon of any type. So before I even get to the lessons I want to pass to you today, I figure I should tell you a little about myself and where I learned these lessons. So you know I'm more than just a youth with a little too much self-confidence. Also, if it helps anyone to know that you have a minister up here. The day after marriage equality was passed, I did go ahead and get myself ordained for anyone who might need it. So I am, in fact, an ordained minister. Now, I am, in fact, 21 years old. I am a senior at Texas A&M University here in Galveston over on Pelican Island, and I'm studying marine biology. And I will be graduating this December. You know, I decided to become a marine biologist when I was 7 years old after visiting a sea turtle rescue center in South Padre Island. And I learned how the sea turtles were dying after eating plastic bags that looked like jellyfish in the water column. At the time, I thought I wanted to learn about sea turtles, but it turned out it was the plastics that had me hooked all along. In the fall of 2016, I found myself presented with a rare opportunity for conducting independent research. I'd been saving up personal funds for some time, and an alignment in my degree schedule to where I could shift classes to the next semester, and combining that with my recent awareness of the threat of microplastics and the relatively limited information known to scientists on them, as well as support from my advisor, Dr. Gilbert Rowe, at the Tamarack Benthic Lab, combined to permit me to take part in this otherwise unthinkable trip. Planned in a matter of months, by late December of that year, 2016, I was on a one-way flight to Ecuador with a waterproof notebook and a backpack. I started at the northern border of Ecuador and the 1st of January after, well, first I took a little hop over to the Galapagos to do some research there. You can't actually take any natural materials from the Galapagos, so I had to filter and do half the process there. But I did get data that I am working on. But after that, I started at the northern border of Ecuador in Esmeraldas and started moving my way south down the coast, moving all the way down the coast of South America through Ecuador to Peru and down through to Santiago, Chile. The purpose of my travels was fairly simple. I was and am trying to see how much plastic and what type of plastic is in the water where I sampled, specifically looking at microplastics, the pieces less than 5 millimeters in diameter. And I'm trying to figure out what determines what type and how much there is in each location, whether it's weather, proximity to cities, geography, wildlife, ocean currents, or something else entirely. The way I do this is essentially by taking the surface layer, about 2 centimeters of sand, in a given area, a little quadrat, from every beach that I go to, and then taking data on the weather, the wildlife, human activities, distance from cities, etc. And this means that after every beach I visit, I have a page in a notebook full of data and notes, and then 3 quart-sized bags full of sand and plastic. I made my way down South America, 3,165 miles or so, using public transportation and staying in the cheapest hotels and hostels I could find over the course of about a month. I shipped my sand back to Tamug at the end, and from there I got on a flight to New Zealand, North Island, just moving my way around the South Pacific. In New Zealand, I rented a small car. What's your type of car called?
Hot
About a Honda Fit, just a little thing, and I lived in that for the next month. I traveled around the North Island of New Zealand, sampling the whole North Island, sleeping at campsites and roadsides, and spending every single day hitting beaches about every 50 kilometers along the coast. After New Zealand, I hopped to Australia. I rented a 1970s camper van. I filled it with cereal, boxed milk, canned beans, dissolvable coffee, and I proceeded to circle the continent. An average of 300 miles a day, every day for 30 days, to cover all 9,000 miles in 1 month. I had a lot of sand. Side note here, make sure if you're ever going to jump into some research, think it all the way through. I didn't quite factor in the shipping costs of sending rocks through international mail, but it's fine. Finally, in late April of 2017, I made it back to the States just in time to fly to Washington, D.C. for the first ever March for Science. After a week's break, traveling to D.C., talking to senators just on the days off, I borrowed my mom's 2004 Suburban, tore out the back seats, put a little 2-inch inflatable bed in there, put a marine battery and solar panel to power a fan at night, and I set off east, starting here in Galveston, to cover the Gulf Coast. On this stretch, I covered Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, the whole Florida Panhandle, down to the Florida Keys, all the way to Key West, and back up the other side to the Georgia border, before heading back to Galveston with a car full of sand. A lot of sand. I can't yet give you the full results of my research, mostly because it's not finished yet, but there's a good amount I can tell you. To start off, nearly every single beach I sampled did have some kind of plastic pollution present. I can't actually think of one that didn't, but I'm saying nearly just to be safe. South America as a whole had some of the most polluted coasts, but so did the north and western sides of Australia closest to Asia. A lot of this is because these regions had the least centralized waste management systems, where in South America, a lot of the trash was dealt with just by throwing it into the ocean, where the ocean was their landfills, and it reflected that. Beyond that, know that complete results are on their way. I do want you to be thinking, though, the little vials that I gave you, out of all the coasts I've visited around the world, the vials are from one particular beach that has some of the highest concentrations of microplastics I have seen anywhere in the about 20,000 miles of beaches I've covered on three continents. So be looking at that and think of where that might have came from. From my travels, I did learn a great deal. I saw more than I thought I would that would be possible in such a short period. By the time I returned to Tamug to drop off my Australian samples, it felt like years had passed. At that point, after dropping off the Australian samples, before even going to the Gulf Coast for another two-ish months, I had spent 5 months in which every single day was filled with new places, new activities, new languages. Aside from nine short cities, every day during those 5 months was spent in a new city, village, or roadside destination. Do you trust me when I say I know a little bit about plastics? Yes. I've learned a little about people in that time. Here's a little of what I've learned. To start off, much of the trash washed up on the beaches, piled in tangled mats in the dunes, inside the rib cages of starved seagulls who ate it thinking it was food, and scattered across the coasts of the world like grains of sand on which they rest, is decades old. This plastic, much of it, is older than I am. Over time, the sun, wind, and surf that we cherish in its natural beauty, that we spoke about earlier, discolors the plastic and cracks it and breaks it down. Now, all the plastic that's ever existed still exists today, except for that which has been burned and now exists as pollution in the air. But plastic, much of it breaks down in smaller and smaller pieces, and this results in the microplastics. But as it does so, this discoloration, this cracking, it ages it to the point that you can look visually and get an approximation as to how old it is. And so throughout my travels, I was able to see an age that, even though we are exponentially increasing our plastic output daily, still so much of it in the environment is so, so old, from before my time, before our time. And, you know, these little pieces, these little things that were tossed away years ago, a cigarette butt that's now just a degraded filter, a bottle cap that has the threads worn away, a food wrapper that was from a company that doesn't exist any longer. The actions that led to them being released into the environment have long since been forgotten, but they still exist. They persist. The plastics we drop to the ground or send to a landfill is quickly forgotten by us, but it remains long after we're gone. There's plastic in the ocean currently killing marine life that was disposed of thoughtlessly by people who have long since passed away. These folks aren't all terrible, but many just didn't know what an impact they were having. They thought that they were insignificant, that their actions were insignificant. They didn't know what an impact they were having. They didn't know that what they did today, then, would have an impact tomorrow. We're living in the tomorrow. We're seeing what an impact they had. This gets me to my core point. The things we say and do are often quickly forgotten by us, but they leave an impact that persists long after we're gone. We have a responsibility to the earth and to one another that makes our tiny actions matter. I'll come back to the plastics, but I want to try out a little exercise. I want you to try to think of a few things for me. If you're uncomfortable with any of the following, feel free to tune me out for a moment. I'll move on shortly. First, I'd like you to think of some of the kindest things people have ever said to you. Think of compliments you received on a bad day or a casual word of praise from someone whom you looked up to. Think of a time someone really made you feel appreciated or valued, when someone said something that just made you feel good. Think of those moments that just warmed your heart. Think of the person who said that. Now ask yourself if they remember those actions, if they remember those words. In all likelihood, I'm going to bet that they don't remember those moments. But you do. Whatever they said or did was so powerful that it stuck with you so that you're remembering it to this day, even if they have no memory of it. If it was just a casual comment by them in passing, but years later, it sticks with you. Now here's the unpleasant part. If you can, try to think of a time someone said something offhanded that just didn't make you feel great. Maybe they were having a bad day and let down their filter, or said something they shouldn't have. Maybe they weren't paying attention and it just dropped out of their mouths. In this instance too, unfortunately, the person probably has no recollection of what they said. And unless you had an opportunity to discuss it with them later, they probably had no idea what kind of impact it had on you. Now let's compare this to plastics. With a side note. As a culture, we've been trained by plastic manufacturers to view plastics as highly disposable. In fact, one specific campaign has existed for 65 years, working to shift the blame from the producers to the consumer. I don't want to detach from my message too much, but if I don't mention this bit, it's going to be working against my own cause. Raise your hand if you've ever heard the term litter bug. Right. Now, what about the Keep America Beautiful campaign? Do you know those are connected? Well, this campaign was formed in 1953 by a consortium of plastic-producing companies, including Philip Morris, Anheuser-Busch, PepsiCo, and Coca-Cola, in response to the growing litter problem in the U.S. However, it was not out of the goodness of their hearts that these companies took these steps, but out of self-preservation. This was at the beginning of the time when plastics were becoming more readily available, cheaper. Many of you, I'm sure, remember like the glass bottles of Coca-Cola and how you could take them back for refill or turn it in, and how it transitioned away from that. A lot of that was because it was cheaper for the bottling companies to not have to have them be refilled, to have the 5-cent part on them, that they could just make it a single-use bottle, and it saved them a lot of money. At the same time, cars really common. Everybody's driving around. They see plastic on the side of the road. They see a Coca-Cola bottle on the side of the road. They say, hey, Coca-Cola, your trash is everywhere. And Coke says, wait, no, that's not us, that's you. It was self-preservation. People seeing these bottles on the side of the road, they started to ask why Coke had moved from the glass refillable to the polluting single-use plastics. Would you believe the term litter bug was popularized by the Make America Beautiful campaign and these companies to shift the blame from the companies to the consumers so that these industries didn't have to take responsibility and that they could take the cheaper way out? So, we're not without blame ourselves, but know that it is the companies as well that the plastic pollution crisis starts at. Back to my comparison. While I want to establish that the root of most of our plastic pollution crisis is, in my opinion, the constant production output of single-use plastics, our behavior is not excused, and our impacts, individual or especially cumulative, are not forgotten. We do continue to support these industries with our passiveness and continual use, and we have an impact in our boycotts and our choice for more responsible products. Comparing the words to the plastics, tying it back together if I can. Those harsh or unpleasant words, you recalled, said in passing, unthinkingly, they are the cigarette butts flicked, the plastic bags blown away in the grocery store parking lots, the styrofoam cup or miscellaneous light trash that was knocked out of the trash bin, and all the landfill waste that was thrown away but escaped the landfill on the breeze. You don't remember them, and you're trained not to. But we are all responsible, myself included, for contributing some plastic to the environment. It's just the society we currently live in. But you can make a change. Would you pull out those vials again? The little brown dots, as many of you might recognize, are sargassum. They're the little beads that help it keep afloat, dry down. I included a lot of larger plastics here to make it more visible. But for the record, again, microplastics are only the 5 millimeters or smaller. The contents of all those vials are from right here in Galveston. specifically directly below Pleasure Pier. I collected all that in about half an hour. All I was using was a little sieve to filter out the sand, but that wasn't hardly concentrating it. I could have taken that vial and scooped the surface of the sand, and it would look about like that. That's what the fish and birds are eating. Thinking the plastic is fish eggs or plankton, clogs up their guts, just gets into the ecosystem, and it's real nasty. That's what's floating in the oceans of the world, swirling around in the gyres and ending up in the beaches everywhere. The good news is, those harsh words or deeds, that plastic waste, it can be replaced with kindness and with responsibility in our actions. By the front door, in which I believe many of you got, was a handout Miss Betts found for me, titled, "So What Can You Do About Ocean Plastic Pollution?" This has some great tips for stepping up and making a difference, including reducing the amount of single-use plastic you consume, recycling, and supporting organizations that are addressing the issue of plastic pollution. Here on the island, there's a group called Surf Rider. They address this issue actively. They fight fighting the rising tide of plastic pollution. Their monthly meeting is actually coming up this Thursday at MOD at 7 o'clock, I believe. As for fighting the harshness of our current reality, well, it can seem, I'm going to step away from my notes for a second, just say that a crisis like this, international and so large, can seem unmanageable. I faced a little bit of depression even when doing this research, because every day for months I was seeing it out there. I was seeing the damage to the environment, and I was seeing how negatively we've impacted the environment. But I also saw places where there are recycling bins, five or six kinds of initiatives where people are actively reducing their waste. Just this week, Seattle voted to ban plastic straws. You can choose to not bring your own straws. It's becoming very popular with the hip youth to bring water bottles and metal straws and reusable bags places. People are becoming more aware of this issue, and a lot of research is being done. At the beginning, I was one of the few doing this kind of research, and even now, papers are coming out almost on a weekly basis with more information on this, and information is how we fight this. And the organizations listed on there, Five Gyres, Oceana, they're working tirelessly. So the one big thing you can do, and this applies to many many sides of our modern life, is don't become hopeless. Hold on to hope, do your part, and take care of yourself. And if we all do our little bit, it has an impact. So I have to say that little part because it can seem really big at times. But if everyone picks up one piece of trash here and there, it makes a difference. I'm going to go back to this. So the good news is, I already read that. As for fighting the harshness of our current reality, just speak kind words whenever possible, or don't speak the unkind ones carelessly. This afternoon, pick up the phone and call someone you haven't talked to in a while. Tell them you love them and that you appreciate them. Tell them they matter to you. Compliment a stranger. It doesn't have to be hard. You could go to a bit more effort and make a dessert for a friend or a neighbor. But you could also just smile at the next person you see. The same with the plastics. I have 5 recycling bins in my kitchen. I regularly take this to the self-sorting center on 61st Street across from the Target. 24/7. You can just pull up there, and there's big containers. You can toss it all in. And there's people there during the day that can help you if you're wanting to get started. My boyfriend Zach here, he takes the little plastic ketchup ramekins from restaurants, wipes them out with a napkin, and takes them home so we can recycle them. We take our little straws from the restaurant so we can recycle. And one of our first dates was going to the cemetery on 43rd Street and picking up trash and then taking it to be recycled. That's how I knew he was the one. But you don't have to be on that level yet either. Just politely tell the waiter at the next restaurant you visit that, no thank you, I don't need a straw. Or if you do need one, you can get some really nifty little plastic ones, like reusable plastic, or metal ones, or you can treat yourself and get a crazy straw that you carry around in your purse. It's a little swirly. It's never too old. Bring your reusable grocery bags shopping instead of plastic. If you have to, if there's an option, paper over plastic. Paper uses trees, but it will at least break down in the environment. Choose a glass bottle over a plastic one if given the chance. Snapple has always had these glass bottles for their tea, and they've recently started converting to plastic. And if you have a chance, just choose the glass. And, nifty side note, if you have little like patio plants, you can fill glass bottles with water and just turn it upside down, and it's like those infomercial waterers that it just slowly waters the plants as they dry out. So, reuse the glass, recycle the glass, but anything besides plastic is what I'm getting at. And finally, just bring your own water bottle so you don't have to buy new bottles where you go. Generally, what I'm trying to say is the effort on your part can be minimal, but the impact, the cumulative impact you leave behind is great. We have a responsibility to Earth and to one another. I've seen what happens when we neglect that responsibility. And it's not a future we want for ourselves, for our children, for our neighbors. You matter. Every single one of you matters. Your impact will be your legacy after you're gone. Will you make that impact a positive one? Thank you.